Team Awesome is back.
That's right, Varian. Tangle Talk with Team Awesome is back for our second podcast of the beginning of season 3 on account of there was a huge freaking bomb and we can't keep up unless we do it this way. So, welcome back, everybody. That's 2 in 1 week so far and we still have one to go. So first we are going to talk about Return of the King because that was the, you know, second episode and we're moving on from here. It's directed by... Guess whose favorite? Guess what group of four women love this episode? Three women. Why did I say four?
Is there a ghost in here?
Guess what group of three women love this episode? God, there's two of me in here. Directed by Philip Pignani, written by Jeremy Shipp, storyboards by Adrian Barrios, Eric Elrod, James Fuji, Diana Kidlade, and Jenessa Warren. We begin with a brand new opening credit sequence, which made us all. I don't know about anybody else, but when the season three started with like. Not a new opening. I was like, what?
You know, no
I
way.
Was pretty sure because it was a premiere that like, they weren't gonna have it. Like, we just had to jump right in. They had to be like, okay, here's what happened, and now, boom, we're back in the Dark Kingdom. Cass is evil. Let's do this.
And also, they didn't want to have like spoilers in the journal. You know, So, I mean, I was fine, but I was a little bit concerned at the beginning of the first episode. So, we have our brand new opening credit sequence, and we now have Varian, Lance, and the girls. Edmund, Hamuel, and that little blue girl are all in the journal.
Yay! Yeah.
The tarot cards are on Rapunzel's desk, and we've gone back to Rapunzel's desk at the castle, so, because she's home now. As well as Gothel's knife, which is sitting in her jar of paintbrushes, WTF. So
Why is that there?
Explain yourself.
That's the stabby Eugene knife. I don't like it.
She's keeping it with her art supplies, you know?
Why would you keep the thing that killed your boyfriend, huh? Why would you keep the thing that killed your boyfriend, Rapunzel?
Why would you keep
him in check?
She's like, it's a letter opener now. You want to watch me open letters, Eugene?
It's because she's crazy this season. She literally is like, I will kill you with my bare hands. She doesn't care.
Oh my God, I love her. I love her now. Like, not like I didn't before, but like, this is amazing. I just love who she is at this point in her life.
She just has she has zero cares. She's like, all right.
She's like, what's the worst that could happen?
Everyone's kind of screwed me at this point, so who cares anymore? Let's screw everything up!
So, we begin at the Glass Sipper, which, as a reminder, it was the tavern in the Eye of Pentecost, the one where Rapunzel found Stallion, where the Stabbingtons arrive to have a drink. Unfortunately for them, they are laughed at, since they have been bested repeatedly by Eugene and his girlfriend, the princess, and his girlfriend princess is, quote, frog. So they're getting laughed at, and they're the Stabbington brothers, so they're not happy about this. Patchy Stabs just completely squishes a metal stein with his bare hand on dry land. Yet somehow Eugene is the overpowered one. Go figure.
I was like, ha!
Like, oh my God, all brawn and Eugene is just better than them, you know?
Yeah. No, I just mean like when he squished it, I was like, oh.
Yeah, oh yeah, I was too. I was like, jeez, I was like when these people were ridiculing them, I was like, they do know they're talking to the Stabbingtons, right? Yeah,
right. You know? They have the word stab,
I wish I could have the word stab in my name.
What's your name? They realize that while Eugene is still alive, no one will take them seriously. So, back in Corona, Rapunzel is doing an absolutely amazing job as temporary queen. She's getting to see her interact with her subjects is, like, super cute. She's really, like, great with everybody, and she's so hands-on, and it's super-duper adorable. Eugene remarks that as queen, she doesn't have to be out on the streets at all times. Rapunzel reminds him that she's still technically just a princess, and that she enjoys being out where the real action is. I'm gonna pause right here just to let y'all know that I think he is deliberately... not overworking herself, but she's keeping herself super duper busy to avoid thinking about things. She doesn't want to think, so she's keeping herself distracted and busy. So that's the TLDR of my thoughts on that. I actually
sounds like me.
Sounds like a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's a moon,
that's
Rapunzel.
How a lot of people cope.
Can relate.
Hashtag relatable as always. Yep. Just then, a horse gets spooked by a rat, and I mean, a really malicious little rat that's like boogie, boogie, boogie at the horse, for God's sakes. And we get this awesome chase scene throughout the streets of Corona. While they are following this horse on Max's back, Eugene's like, is this a new alley? And then, like, I mean, honestly, it cracked me up. It's such a throwaway line, but it's like, oh, okay? Is this a new alley?
He's so surprised. He's like, is this a new alley?
Yes, they built like, a whole new alley.
Red Corona, like, stealing from people, I could see why he'd be like, I don't know this alley.
Yeah. You've redecorated.
Maybe it's like, always been blocked off by boxes, and then they've just recently cleaned the box out, so now it's open again. I don't know. Eugene attempts to jump onto the cart where the horse is dragging. He doesn't get a good hold, so then he's trying desperately to run behind while holding on, going, Max, 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 Max. And Max just picks him up and tosses him, and he goes, thank you!
She's like, it's so cute.
Purple little dork moment. It's so cute. Like, oh my gosh, there's so much good Eugene in this episode with good reason. So Rapunzel nearly goes headfirst off the cart, and Eugene gets to fly through the air again, poor dear. Rapunzel, you know, lashes out her hair and catches them. And I notice another thing that she is, she's like so fast to just undo the hair and use it. Like, really fast, drop of a hat. She's just like, no, she's using the hair. She's not going to like mess around anymore.
She's good.
With a rather rough landing, Eugene looks up to find King Edmund. On his beautiful horse, who we later on this episode learn his name, Domino, and it's a perfect name for her. She's gorgeous and wonderful, and she's got the most luscious mane of hair I've ever seen. It's even better than Andrew's.
Why do all of Edmund's animals have
to listen, the first time they said it, I thought it was Dalmer. I was like, is that horse's name Dalmer? And they were like, no, it's Domino. I was like, oh, okay.
So we fade into another scene where Rapunzel and Eugene are sitting with King Edmund outside at a cafe. Eugene, annoyed and confused by the presence of his father, asks him why he's in Corona.
He's so upset. He's like, Dad, why are you here? Go away.
I don't know. He's like, Edmund, why are you here? Go away. He won't even call.
Well, of course, but I'm just saying because
he informs them that after their rather unfortunate run-in with the family recently, he wanted to make sure that Eugene got a prized family heirloom, which is a sash with the sigil of the Dark Kingdom on it.
It's so funny.
Tries to explain this at first, but he just coughs up a bunch of feathers because he's Hannibal.
I love that. He just was like, quack! And then Edmund's like, no, Hannibal, let me
explain.
And I was like, ah!
I love their dynamics so much.
I do too.
Also, that's the first time we got to hear Hammy's name.
It is. Mm-hmm. We've known him for a while because, you know, Ben told us, but like, that was our first time we actually got told in canon what the bird's name is. Eugene, being understandably a bit of an ass, doesn't care for or want the sash, nor does he want Edmund to be there, and he asks him to leave. Edmund, the sweet bean that he is, tells Hamuel that he was hoping that they'd ask him to stay, and Rapunzel, also being a sweet bean, asks Edmund to stay for the night, much to Eugene's disapproval.
He's like, what? No!
But then he, like, leans on his hands and his face is all squishy.
The face squish.
Squishiest boy!
His face is all squishy. You just want to squish his cheeks. He's so squishy.
I just want to squish him and give him a kiss and a hug and be like, stop disrespecting your father!
And he's so pouty and it's so cute and I love it. So now we are on the roof, and Eugene is looking at the sash while Rapunzel comes to join him. She asks him if he's thinking about his dad, and he says that Edmund is not his dad, he's just a strange man who can't keep his thoughts to himself, and that he abandoned him as a child, and he didn't even try to stay in touch with him.
I love that line so much. He's like, first of all, he's not my dad. And I'm like,
this is like
shut up.
It's beautiful, though, because this is like the Eugene parental angst that we've all been wanting.
Yes.
He didn't have time to process this in the Dark Kingdom, so we're getting to see it immediately, and that's, like, wonderful.
Just
and
like I'm we told you. Everyone was so concerned. Like, they're not going to just brush over it, or else they'll have to deal with the wrath of me, which they don't want.
Yes, we all know how much they don't want the wrath of Ellie.
They don't want the wrath of Ellie.
Rapunzel reminds Eugene that the only companion Edmund has had is a crow that could get lost in a boot.
So, I love that, too. She's like, his only friend is a crow who could get stuck in a boot.
Just lost. She used the word lost, which implies like this entire going into the boot. And then it just makes you remember that our first introduction to Hamuel was Eugene pouring him out of the boot that he was just wearing. Like, how did Hammy get in there?
I don't know how Hammy got in there, but I love him so much.
So Edmund is probably lonely.
Yeah. A little bit.
She says to him, and you might even get to like him. And Eugene replies, and short it could sprout rings and lay its sprout wings and lay an egg, but you never know, which is like the sickest burn to free bird I have ever heard. I love how the writers are like, you know that Deus Ex Machina and Freebird? It was stupid. It was so beautiful. I love that. That was amazing. Thank you, Jeremy. We appreciate you. So Hamuel, sweet Hamuel, cooing softly like a pigeon as he flies around in front of them in Eugene's boot, which he stole. So Eugene's like, is that my boot? And Ramona just puts her hand on his like it's okay.
She literally, Hammy starts flying by and she just... her hand like shoots out and grabs his and pulls it gently closer before he even says anything. And I'm just like, she knew what was coming. And she's like, no, we're not allowed to chase after the bird. Calm down, I'm here.
So sweet.
God, so cute.
So the next morning finds us with Eugene. He's just finished having breakfast with Pascal, who, by the way, made the breakfast, which is like a callback to, you know, Pascal's story where he makes this huge feast dinner for Rapunzel. I'm like, this freaking chameleon can cook, man. Like, for a lot of people, too. So and
I don't know if anybody else had the thought, but, like, when I saw Eugene eating breakfast, I was like, if it's pancakes?
Amazing! Then there's a whole basket full of uneaten bread. And I'm like, since when do you waste bread?
When you're eating a ton of pancakes. That's when.
Fair enough.
That's a lot of
They're
carbs,
already
man.
Bready enough.
So Eugene suggests that they go take a nap in his room and slip into a delightful food coma. He remarks that the best part is that Edmund is going to be leaving soon. But as soon as they enter his room, they find it completely trashed and the Dark Kingdom sash is gone. And Eugene says...
the best line ever.
I've been robbed. So that's how this feels. It's just like,
did you see Pascal's face? He was like,
yes. Oh my god, I love it. Just like he can barely choke the words out and then he just acknowledges that this is how he's made people feel his entire life.
Oh.
It's just like
crap. Well,
lesson learned the hard way, Eugene. Yeah. Stan and Pete come to investigate because they heard the word robbed, and they do a great Stan and Pete style job. Well, Edmund is furious that someone has stolen their family sash. Yeah, their family stash. Oh boy. That was in the tree. Okay, the great tree. That's where the family stash was. So Rapunzel offers Eugene to help Edmund, but Eugene insists that Stan and Pete have it covered, which they don't like one of, like, I think Stan found his own helmet and
yes.
yelling at him about it.
Or no, like, it's Pete who finds his own helmet.
Okay,
I think.
Pete finds, yeah. Okay, anyway, one of them finds their own helmet and the other one is yelling at them about it and they're like,
I told you not to take that off.
I miss them so much. I'm so happy they're back.
They're so great. This, like, they've been, like, every little moment they've been in so far this season has been stellar. So, looking around for about 2 seconds, Eugene finds a ransom note for the sash on the floor. Said note says that whoever stole the sash will exchange it for gold at Mount Cezanne. You remember Mount Cezanne, don't you? It's the same mount where Rapunzel, Ariana, and Willow go to watch the Empyrean shower. So
many callbacks.
Like, they're like, yeah, they're like actually reminding you that, like, oh, we've been all these places before. Like, we haven't had a new location. They're really making use of the locations they've already got, and that's really cool. So Edmund insists.
You see different parts of it, like.
Yeah.
But,
and
at you
different
know.
Times of day, which is cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So Edmund insists they must get it back, whatever the cost, but Eugene does not want to go on a day-long trip with his father. Edmund goes all, woe is me, and says that he will just take the trip alone.
Oh my god, he's so cute. He's like, I guess I'll just have to go alone with nobody
except
Samuel.
Stink eye, and she's like, trying to get him to go, and Eugene's like gesturing that he doesn't want to, and she elbows him really hard, so he rolls his eye.
He stands all like proud. He's like, no, I'm not going, and she just
elbows
him.
So he rolls his eyes and begrudgingly agrees to go along, much to Edmund's delight.
Yay! He's so happy that his baby boy's coming with him.
So as they prepare to leave, Edmund asks Eugene if he brought along food. Edmund responds with, of course I did, Horace. Eugene's given name is Horace.
I hate
this name, especially considering that they could have used Bastion. They could have used Bastion.
But the only way they can make it up to me
is if they bring Bastion in.
They make Shinreal.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've all seen me post about him a bajillion times because he's my love bug. I love him just like a hair's less than Eugene. He goes Eugene, then right below him is Bastion. But I'm just like, if you use Horus and you don't bring in Bastion at all, they're going to feel the wrath of Ellie. Oh my god. I'm so upset. I wanted it to be Bastion. And literally, it could have been pretty much anything else, and I probably would have liked it more than Horus.
No, if it were Lester, I would have been mad.
Well, yes.
And also, if it had been like Louis or Louis or something like that, I wouldn't have been happy, because do you have any idea how many Louis and Louises Disney owns?
Right.
Like,
a lot. Just,
Horus. They have two Horuses as it is, but
they have three.
They have two before this moment.
I understand what you're saying. Sorry.
That's okay. That's so,
I wish it had Herman. Would have been a Cinderella reference.
So then Eugene says, "How is it possible that my real name is even worse than Eugene?"
I love how he delivers that line.
He delivers so many lines fantastically. And then Max laughs at him.
That's the only reason I'm okay with, you know, his name being stupider and not cool.
Mm-hmm.
Is because of the way he says that line.
Yes.
How is it possible my real name is even worse than you take?
So as the two Dark Kingdom royals leave Corona, we see that the Stabbingtons have arrived and are on the hunt for Eugene. In the forest, Edmund is enjoying the wonders of nature, which is adorable as he's been in the Dark Kingdom for 25 plus years. Eugene is already 100% done with his trip. I mean, he was 100% done before they even left. He goes to get the food out of the bag, and instead he finds nothing but junk. It's Edmund's sack of Lucky Charms.
So cute. He's like, I must have grabbed the wrong bag. I have my Lucky Charms instead. And I'm like,
since they have no food, Edmund suggests that they go fishing. He throws his axe up, getting a perfect fishing pole, and also getting the axe stuck in the tree in the meantime. Back in Corona, I'm not getting that axe. I'm not doing it.
Yourself, one-armed father.
Back in Corona, Rapunzel is playing with one of the little girls of the fountain. She does this coin behind the ear magic trick that she states that Eugene taught to her, which is like freaking adorable.
So
now we all
cute.
Want to see like teaching her the trick. It's so cute. And then she gives the coin to her and tells her to make a wish in the fountain. Suddenly, Feldspar comes running out despondent as someone has broken into a shop and left two identical sets of footprints, which cracks me up because as the cobbler, he would definitely recognize them as identical. Like, he's the guy who makes shoes. He knows when shoes are identical and he knows when foot sizes are identical. I love it. Rapunzel goes into high alert. The little girl also mentions that she saw them,
yeah.
That one of them has an eye patch. And Rapunzel goes into high alert. She's like, it's the Stabbingtons. Send out, you know, we're going to have a patrol every hour and tighten security. And she goes into, you know, just, yeah, she's like, she's not putting up with this.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's not putting up with this.
Yep.
Stan and Pete are quickly captured by the Stabbingtons. There's Stan and Pete.
Oh, God.
In an alleyway, Stan and Pete are interrogated by the Stabbingtons. And Pete quickly tells them where Eugene is because he's Pete. And Stan's like, but you'll never catch him. Eugene is fast as the wind.
I'm like, wait, he's only been as fast as the wind like once, and you don't know about that, I'm pretty sure. That's when he was racing to go save his lady love in the movie. But like, oh, Stan, man. I don't think you know about that, so I don't
know
how you know that.
Stan the man and he's Eugene the fiend, and so yep. Obviously they've got a history and he's got to back
That's
him up.
That's true.
Also, you have to remember that Eugene has been teaching him how to catch a thief, and so he must see him fast as the wind, Stan.
Yeah.
So, back in the forest, we see that the two men are bonding, quote-unquote, as they fish side by side. I thought it was really cute that the fish floats were acorns. That was adorable.
Yes!
I love that.
So cute.
So, Edmund begins to catch a fish, and he gets to his feet, and so does Eugene, surprised. He says, it's got to be a 20-pounder, and he pulls it out, this dinky, tiny little thing, which Hamuel, like, pulls off the hook and promptly drops.
He, like, gets it in his mouth, and then he, like, caws and drops it. It falls back in the water.
Amazing. Oh, I love those two so much. They're so derpy together. And so, you know, he calls Eugene Horace again, and Eugene says, for the 11th time, it's Eugene.
So cute.
Edmund, sad that Eugene thinks he's a fool, reveals that he has figgy pudding in his pocket. And this whole scene is possibly the best scene in the whole episode.
It really is. God!
Say this. We're probably going to say it's the best scene of the whole episode like 8 times.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
So this scene, the best scene in the whole episode.
Literally one of my favorite episodes ever.
It's audience is why we have figgy pudding.
Yeah.
So first of all, it's like, why figgy pudding? And Edmund, talking to Hamuel, you know, reveals that he has figgy pudding in his pocket. He turns back to Eugene and says, I bet you'll never guess what I have in my pocket.
He's such a goober.
I don't know what's weirder, that you have figgy pudding in your pocket or that your armor actually has pockets.
Oh my god, and Edmund makes, when he's talking to Hammy, he makes so many like Eugene faces. Mm-hmm. I was like, they're so beautiful.
And then comes, you know, one of the other best lines in the entire episode. Oh god, I can't even not laugh. This is so great.
Any of your pocket pudding.
He's like, you know you want my pudding. I don't want any of your pocket pudding.
Oh my god.
And the delivery is amazing. And just like, this
that
is such a
good episode. Win an award for that. If he's not nominated for an Annie Award.
Annie?
And if he does not win, I will cry. Because he should get one for that line alone.
And then Edmund says, of course you do. I can tell a lot about a man by looking into his eyes.
I'm so happy. Hard,
bro. Like, seriously. Eugene does not want your pocket pudding.
They're going
to
keep giving me that line, and it's going to make me cry every time.
So deciding that giving Eugene the pudding is too easy, Edmund decides that they're going to have a little contest to see who can win the pudding. Eugene does not want to participate in this contest because he does not want any of the pocket pudding.
He's like, Edmund, you can really just have the pudding.
I was really confused. I was like, how does he have a whole lot of pudding in his pocket? Until I was like, oh, it's figgy pudding, okay?
Oh, God, Eddie.
I can't believe his armor has pockets. This is like what women want. Give me
I know, right?
I want secret figgy pudding pockets.
So, he decides that their contest is going to be a target practice throwing weapons contest that Eugene still has not agreed to. So he throws his axe and then takes Eugene into this tree stump, and then he takes Eugene's sword out of the sheath, which Eugene did not agree to, and throws that also, and when that one hits the tree stump, the tree stump and both weapons go falling into the river below. So they are now weaponless.
Weapons are weapons!
So Eugene, exasperated, says that this is impossible, to which Edmund replies, if something is not impossible, it's not worth doing. Eugene is about to go off on him when the line suddenly hits him. He turns around and he's like, did you just say that if something is not impossible, it's not worth doing? And it turns out that this is a line from a Flynn Rider book, Flynn Rider and the Lost Treasure of Scotia. Mm-hmm. And both of them really like this book. It's like their favorite book.
It's and their Eugene, favorite. And I was like,
Eugene's all sad. Eugene's like, I used to read that all the time until I accidentally dropped it off a cliff, which is like.
Dropped it off a cliff! He's so stupid. I love him.
But I'm also like, you tell your dad that right after getting on his case for dropping your weapons off a cliff? Oh my god, this episode.
He's so stupid. I love him. They're both so stupid. I don't know how one family can radiate such idiocy energy. Like, oh my god.
So they have this adorable bonding moment where they're now discussing a scene in the book, and Eugene gives Edmund a side hug, and it's adorable.
And oh my god, when Eddie's describing it, and he like happily jumps up yes. onto another.
Oh my god, it's so like, cute!
A rock or something. I was like, ah!
They're so adorable.
Cute. Stop making me fall in love with you. I'm already in love with your son. Oh, God.
So So returning to Corona, Rapunzel finds Stan and Pete sobbing in the alley. They inform her that Stan gets to know where Eugene is going, and Rapunzel leaves Aunt Fidelia to save her boyfriend.
She's like, oh my god, okay, I'll handle it. You two just keep crying in the alley, I guess.
Also, it's like really great because she was like doing really good forensics in this episode. Like, we didn't see a lot of it, but she just like did it. She understood. Yeah. She's like, okay, matching boot prints and an eye patch, it's got to be the Stabbingtons. And then she tracks their muddy, muddy boots all over Corona because they don't wipe their feet, apparently.
And also she found Stan and Pete because they were sobbing loudly.
they were crying, yes.
Which she says, which I'm like, ooh, sick burn.
She's out on, yes, and you were crying loudly. Back with the boys, they are discussing more of the great scenes from the Flynn Rider books, which is, like, adorable, because now they're just, like, having this great on full-on nerd conversation. God, don't you love getting together with nerds?
It's so cute.
Apparently, Eugene not only stole the moniker, he also stole the kingdom, and I aren't exactly simpatico at the moment. Like,
oh my god!
That's amazing. Like, that's just, he's such a nerd. Oh my god.
Died. I was like, he was literally just quoting to Rapunzel in the movie.
Yes,
he was just quoting a book line. He was trying to be all cool and suave to this girl he met in a tower by quoting a book line. That would be like some freaking nerd.
Like if some dude tried to pick you up by quoting movies at you, and it's like, okay, oh that would work on some people, but like...
He's such a doofus.
He's such a nerd. I love it. And then Edmund says this fantastic line, and people think it's a kid's book. Adults everywhere appreciate the nuance of Flynn Rider's adventures. It's like that line was specifically written in reference to the fans loving this show. I'm sorry, that's just facts.
They wrote it for us. They wrote it for exactly the fans. For us.
They wrote it for us. It's amazing. Yep. Adult fans of Tales.
It's probably great. More so for you, Becky, because you were already an adult.
I was an adult when the movie came out. So
you were an adult. I was 12.
God,
about to turn 13. 12.
We was widow. It was so long ago.
Little baby.
But yeah, we do, and we appreciate you guys so much. Once again, Jeremy, thank you.
So many good lines. If I ever meet him, I will be like, here is my undying love in the form of something. I don't know, like cookies or a trophy or maybe just a hug.
Who knows? Suddenly, Eugene realizes that they're not alone and the Stabbingtons are there ready to strike. Eugene, while introducing them to each other, realizes that he has more of history with the Stabbingtons than he does with Edmund. And he says, this is kind of like a family gathering for me.
Wow, it's so cute. He's like, Edmund claims he's my long-lost father, but actually, I have more history with the two of you, so this is kind of like a family gathering for me. And I was like, oh, you freaking dork! I hate you, and I love you so much!
So, while the battle begins, and while they're sitting there, Edmund just eats his pocket pudding at sideburns.
He like, pocket-sanded it! He was just like, Pinky pudding!
Pudding! And it hits sideburn stabbing him right in the face, and Eugene goes, he can tell a lot about a man by looking into his eyes.
That's my favorite freaking part.
I was like, well, I didn't actually cry, but I wanted to.
It was so amazing.
I was like, he said the line!
So, Edmund is like, hello overpowered, which is like an amazing hello overpowered thing, because with this one-armed knight dude grabs Patchy and he just yeets him right into sideburns, knocks them both out cold, just like picks him up like a freaking, what is it, it's a shot put, he shot puts him right into his brother. It was amazing. I loved it. And he's got one arm.
Yep.
So once the Stabbingtons are down, Eugene and Edmund leave, but not before setting up a little distraction with a wind-up crow and a toy yo-yo that were in Edmund's Lucky Charms.
Bag of Lucky Charms.
I mean, it was like a great little thing because they set it up so that like the little crow like waddles and then bounces back, and it's all tied to like a clump of grass so that it sounds like they're over there. It's this great distraction. It's really great. Edmund's all proud of himself and his bag of Lucky Charms, that he and his bag of Lucky Charms help, and shows Eugene the bag's contents once more, and right on top, whoops, there's the sash. It turns out that Edmund stole it from Eugene's room so that they could go on this journey together. Eugene, furious that Edmund thought he could make up for abandoning him for 24 years, and I'm going to side swipe just a little bit, guys. Eugene is not 24, he's 25. He's like, okay, mm-hmm. like, I was dropped off at the orphanage when I was one. I had 24 years of being abandoned.
I had a thought mm-hmm. about this as well. Uh-huh. Maybe when Eddie loses his arm, when we see it happen in the first flashback, maybe Eugene wasn't alive yet? I don't know.
No, because the way that Edmund says that the moon has already the moon
says true
lives really implies that his wife is already dead.
Mm, yes. So. I mean, that was one of my pieces of evidence. There we go. It was evidentiary support.
So between that and the fact that it keeps calling him Horace, Eugene's just like, done. And he storms off back to Corona with Max.
He's like, bye.
So.
And I was like, Eugene, you get back there and you apologize to your father.
No, honestly, he doesn't need to apologize. He was wrong.
No, I know. I'm just being silly.
He doesn't. I know, but I'm just defending Eugene. So, hey, here we go. So up on Mount Sizon, Edmund sadly looks at the sash, wishing things had gone better with Eugene. And then the Stabbingtons appear and demand that he take them to Eugene. But he refuses. Unfortunately for him, they best him, and they send Hamuel off with their dagger tied to his leg to lure Eugene to them. Eugene, seeing Hamuel, heads back up to save Edmund after muttering the line that dads are more trouble than they're worth. Aww. Like, Lord, he's just... But he did turn around, so it's not like...
It's so cute, though. He's like... Dads are more trouble than they're worth. Come on, Max. And then they just go back, and I'm like,
wanted parents his entire childhood. Now, like, I take it back. I don't. This is a monkey polish. I take it back. So on the mountain once more, the Stabbingtons have set a trap for Eugene. They knock a huge boulder off the cliff when he arrives, and they seem to have squashed him. Edmund's face just crumples.
Oh my God.
And I noticed something else. So Eugene shows up. And Edmund yells to him the same way Rapunzel did in the tower.
Oh, God, you're right.
He's just like, and then, like, the boulder falls.
That's evil. What a good callback.
Yeah.
But also, I was like, oh, no. Edmund just watched his baby boy get turned into an actual Fitz pancake.
Oh, my God.
You're welcome. Fitz pancake. I was writing the talking points, and I was like, oh, yeah, Edmund thinks Eugene got squished. And I'm like, flat as a pancake. Fitz pancake! Oh, that's genius.
So the Stabbingtons, now with a priceless sash and the king, activate the log flume, and they head down the mountain on a log. Eugene, now trapped in the cave. Oh, also, not only did that thing fall on Eugene, he pushed Max out of the way. Mm-hmm. So that Max... not get squashed also. Ugh, I love that. So now Eugene is actually trapped in a cave. He did not get squished.
Yay! He's not a Fitz pancake.
He's got Domino with him, and he's not pleased with his situation. Definitely Father of the Year contender, he mutters. Better. Edmund is better than all the other dads in the show, so...
I mean, Kieran can win some points back, because
Kieran gets points back
now. Dead.
He's not dead, he told Varian, he was proud of him.
Yeah, he said he was proud of Varian. So I'm like, okay, you're definitely, I mean, I think Kieran was probably already second in line. I think it really does go Edmund, Kieran, Cap, and then, like, you know, 50 spaces down past everyone else's dad, Frederick. So, you know, Kieran is pretty close. Yeah. To the top. Yeah, anyways, so, yeah.
But, you know, Edmund still wins.
he really does.
Hamuel is being amazing, and the light coming in the cave through the cracks behind the boulder, like, hit the button on the bag of Lucky Charms, and so Hamuel starts chasing the light around like a freaking cat.
He's a little kitty!
Because apparently there's no animal in this show that is just the animal that they are, except for maybe Owl.
Yes.
So he's a little kitty. He's a little kitty crow. And the bag falls open, and it spills some of the contents. And as Eugene goes to pick them up, he realizes it, something, that all of these things, every single one of them is from his childhood. There's a little wooden horsey toy and a marked deck of cards and this loaded dice and a two-headed coin with Edmund's face on it.
Oh my God, I died. Like, I was like, ah!
I mean, I saw somebody else point it out, but I absolutely agree that at least some of this stuff is stuff that Edmund got to Eugene somehow. Like, probably had Hamuel or one of the other crows drop it off and then found
it. Well, I mean, so crows do bring gifts. Little gifts, so.
They do. Yeah. They bring gifts. That's a thing that crows do. Yeah. So,
but I was like, oh my God, he didn't even know it was his daddy. He just had a coin that had his dad on it.
It was so sweet.
All my tears.
So there's also Eugene's first hand mirror, and there's also Flynn Rider and the Lost Treasure of Scotia. In other words, Edmund's crows picked it up and brought it back to Edmund for him.
Oh. So, it probably fell off the cliff and hit Hammy.
Yeah, right.
Probably.
And he was like, "Ah!" and brought it back.
So Edmund has been keeping close to Eugene in the only way that he possibly could, and that would be to collect his discarded toys and things. Although loaded dice and marked cards are not exactly toys, but hey, baby's first con.
I did want to point out something really funny. I don't know if they meant this to do this on purpose or if it's just a funny coincidence, but for a while back in, like, I want to say like 2012, 2013, the fandom, when we were a little crazier, thought that Eugene's dads were Miguel and Tulio from DreamWorks' The Road to El Dorado. And they have loaded dice. So I was like, is this a funny little reference? Because if so, props. If not, funny coincidence.
We were crazy.
But I just thought it was funny because I was like, it's something his dad has. But, you know.
We find the gold, we take the gold, we have a son obsessed with gold, he finds a girl whose hair is made of gold, and then we roll back to street like there's no mañana.
I love that. It was such a weird thing, but I loved it so much. I was like,
I mean, like, you know, for a crack, I could buy it.
I was like, Eugene having two gay dads, I love it. Sign me up.
Yeah. So Rapunzel arrives back at the cave, and using her hair and both Fidella and Max as, you know, hauling implements, she pries the boulder down off the cave, and she frees Eugene, and they set off on a log of their own to save Edmund. And as she's releasing the water, she's the girl, no more Miss Nice Princess! But just for the short term, after we deal these guys, I am totally nice again. And Eugene's like, wasn't worried, but thanks anyway. It's like adorable. But
I
love
that he says, but thanks anyway.
Yes.
Like, but almost falling off.
Then Rapunzel and Eugene are like surfing on this log, and I agree with you, Ellie. This absolutely looks like it was an homage to the part in the movie when they were like foot surfing down the water from the dam.
Which,
like,
is honestly one of the most beautiful Eugene moments in the movie. Really, I'm like, he's so handsome.
It's very good.
Love him.
So yeah, I mean, absolutely, I 100% believe that was intended to be an homage.
Yay, so, more movie references.
Eugene and Rapunzel catch up to the Stabbingtons and to Edmund, and Eugene hops into the log to rescue his dad. And he says to the Stabbingtons, you dropped a boulder on me and you missed. I mean, who misses with a boulder?
With a boulder.
The way he goes, and you missed. It's my, I love that line so much.
It's so cute. He's such a goober.
What is, like, number six, where we're like, this is the best part of
the game. I know.
I love this line. Best line. So the Stabbingtons get knocked out by a tree branch that Domino, like, pulls back with her teeth and just smacks him in the face. And Eugene's like, haha, nice teamwork. And Rapunzel alerts everyone to the fact that there's a log jam up ahead. And just as Eugene is about to jump to Rapunzel's log, he realizes that he can't just leave the Stabbingtons to die.
What a good boy.
Good boy. Like,
come on.
So
they've tried to kill you so many times, and you're like, I can't let them die. And I'm like, no. Good job, Eugene. You're the best.
You were raised right by your girlfriend. So Edmund tells him that they don't have time to save them and that it's impossible, but Eugene replies that if something's not impossible, it's not worth doing. And so the two of them together bring the Stabbingtons safely to Rapunzel's log. And on the way over, Eugene drops the sash, and Edmund tells him, leave it, Eugene. And he goes, Dad, you called me Eugene. And he goes, you called me Dad. And they're all cute.
And Rapunzel's like, hey.
She's like, can you two stop having a moment? You're gonna so die.
She's like, okay, that's cute. Get over here. You know?
I'm like, wow, Rapunzel, let them have their cuteness.
Told you, she's wild this season. She doesn't care anymore.
She's done.
She's so funny.
Done with nonsense, man. You can have your moment, but have it in safety. So Edmund's just like, this woman is amazing. And then Eugene's like, I know.
Just
like,
so cute.
Adorable. I love it. This whole episode is so cute. So they're safely back on the ground. Pascal has brought the remains of the medallion from the sash. It's totally broken beyond repair. There's all these missing pieces. It doesn't line up at all. Stamingtons are shocked to find that Eugene would save their lives. And now is like the first time we have any indication that they are on the path to being two crying goobers at a wedding. Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, I've been waiting for this moment because all through seasons 1 and 2, when we saw them, I was like, you are not even trying to make them.
I was like, I don't understand. How are they going to get there? And then this part, I had to pause because I was like, they're on the path.
They're on the path
to tea. They're on the path to tea.
I felt like I cried hard. I saved that for later. But like, I started getting all misty-eyed because I realized that they were finally setting us up for the payoff. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh my freaking God, we are actually in Endgame now.
Yeah, I know.
And so Edmund states, I guess my son believes in second chances. And Eugene, turning to Rapunzel, says, I learned that from the best. And he smooches her hand and they look at each other adorably. And it's just so cute and I can't stand it.
Eddie's face as he's watching this is just so like, aww, like all sweet. And I'm like,
he's like, I ship it.
He ships them so hard.
He does. I'm so happy. I'm like, yes.
Back in Eugene's room, he and Rapunzel are playing with some of his childhood toys. He's like, look at this. And he winds up his little crow and watches them walk around. And he's like, adorable.
Isn't he great? That's what he says.
Edmund arrives and Eugene has to cover the fact that they were just playing with toys. Because they weren't playing with toys. They were doing research like adults do. It was adorable. I love that moment. Oh my God. Other best moment in the show. So it turns out that Xavier and Edmund worked together and they made a new sash for Eugene. It bears the symbol of Corona and it's white and gold, which are the same colors as the cover of the Flynn Rider book. And it's the wedding sash, guys.
I cried ugly tears. I was screaming.
I did. I sobbed so hard. Oh my gosh. I lost it. I sobbed so hard when that was revealed. Just like, oh God, I was a mess. I was a mess.
So good.
So, and then Eugene just like does a cute little jump up and hug Edmund, and he hugs him back. It's amazing.
I died at that part. Like, I was really excited that it was the wedding sash, but then he hugged him and I was like, my babies. That's all I wanted. That's literally all I wanted. I wanted this goofy father-son bonding episode and I wanted a hug. I wanted the Fitz hug.
So great. So all of this done and wrapped, we go to Cassandra, who is in a dark part of the woods or the Dark Kingdom or somewhere. It's hard to say where she is. She's on rocky ground with black rocks all around her. That's where she is. She attempts to get the rocks to do anything, but she's unable to do so. And just as she gives up, we hear that voice from the blue girl again. So she just calls out her name, and Cassandra opens her eyes and looks, and that's where the episode cuts out. Going back to the whole sash and the crying thing, like, legitimately, after I went to bed, first I had to wind down from this episode, and after I went to bed that night, I was lying in bed for maybe 10 minutes, and I just burst into tears again. And it was like this interesting cocktail of emotions, because first of all, I was losing it over the sash all over again. But then I also started getting this horrible sense of, we are in the end game. This is going to end. This is like getting closer to over. And it was like sad and happy at the same time. And it was like terrible and wonderful. And I bawled, like, oh my gosh, it was ridiculous. Okay. So before I move on to the next episode, Ellie actually has a special announcement for everybody.
Yes. I'm here today to talk about dead naming. So, Eugene's birth name is Horace. And I've seen a lot of people using this in a jokey way, which, you know, okay. I mean, just be kind and courteous with your jokes. Don't make them too mean. And maybe don't do it too often. But we can't refer to him as Horace because that's not his name. It might have been the name that Edmund and Fitz's mom gave to him, but it's not like actually his name. His name is Eugene. That is the name he's lived with for the longest time. It's the name he's most comfortable with, all that jazz. So, you know, I don't want to call out anyone in particular, but like, you know, most of the asks I saw were all anonymous, so I don't know if it was the same people. I'm not hating on anyone, but just if you're going to send asks where you refer to Eugene as Horace and, you know, as that, it's kind of rude.
Also, I'm just going to let you guys know that it got to a point where I stopped answering asks that referred to him as Horace, even if like the rest of the ask had a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they like put in parentheses afterwards, like giggle or whatever, I was like, no, I'm not answering this because I got tired of it really fast. And also, I know that some people have commented that using the term dead name is like just for trans people and it's actually not. According to the Urban Dictionary, the birth name of somebody who has changed their name, most commonly attributed to trans people, but can be attributed to any person who has changed their name. Yeah. So,
and
literally,
we've talked about dead names before, like we talked about it in an earlier episode. You know, with people referring to him as Flynn. And I know it's not the best example, but it even happens. Somebody catches themselves in this episode. The barkeep at the Glass Sipper, he's about to call him Flynn, and then he says, oh, Eugene. And I'm like, and then the other thugs in there refer to him as Eugene. And I'm like, that's actually really great. I know you probably don't like him, but you're showing him respect in a way by calling him his actual name.
And even if you are, even if their point was to disrespect the Stabbingtons by respecting Eugene, they're still respecting Eugene and his desire to go by the name he's got. So, I mean, all three of us got kind of irritated. I mean, it has calmed down in the interim days some, but yeah.
I also saw somebody who sent you an ask, also anonymously, who was like, people referring to Eugene by his dead name is reminding me when I got dead named. So even though you might think it's funny, it can have real effects on people. There are people who have to deal with stuff like that, whether they be trans or they're just going by a different name because there's, you know,
something about their past that they don't want to have. Yeah, it's nobody's business why anybody changes their name.
Exactly.
And it's very possible to trigger someone by using their dead name. So it's just a case of try to be respectful, guys. Yes, joking around is one thing, but like there is taking it too far and you need to be careful of your audience.
Yeah. Because and also at the end of the episode, Edmund refers to Eugene as Eugene. He has accepted his name and he respects Eugene as Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he recognizes that Eugene is not comfortable being called Horace. And so he calls him Eugene. And that's a sign of respect. And he's not probably going to refer to him as Horace anymore. Or if he does, hopefully, you know, he'll catch himself. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd be fine if we had a little moment like that where he goes to call him Horace, but he catches himself and then says Eugene. Because that really shows growth and understanding. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really nice. So I just wanted to talk about it, just give some insight because, I want everybody to respect everybody, whether it be fictional characters or actual people.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I just think it's important to be kind and courteous to each other. And yeah, I know it's like I live in a very politically liberal place, so I've been around stuff like that for a really long time, and I know not everybody has, so I just wanted to have a teaching moment. And I didn't want to call anybody out and be like, hey, you're stupid for doing this, because you're not. You're not aware, and that's okay. So yeah, we can move on to the next episode now. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming to my PSA.
The more you know.
Yes. Yep. Do-do-do.
Now it's on to Who's Afraid for the Big Bad Wolf, directed by Shane Zelvin, story by Jace Ricci and Kelly Hannon, written by Jace Ricci, storyboards by Jerry Yu Ching and Anthony Mezzada. We open with Rapunzel running through the woods in the dead of night, a full moon hanging in the sky. She's being chased by some huge beast growling at her. We already know it's a werewolf, lol. it takes her...
Thanks, Leeks.
Thanks, Mandy.
Yeah, thanks, everything. It stalks her behind some rocks, and she's looking up at it and comments, "My, what big teeth you have." And we cut to 36 hours earlier. 63. Yeah,
which is a really weird number.
Yeah, it is.
36?
No, really, because what it is it's a day and a half.
I know, but it just felt really weird. I was like, it's usually like 24. Like
even 24 or 48.
48. But I was like, okay.
Okay. So Rapunzel, Eugene, Lance, Red, Angry, and Max are walking through town under walking through a town under construction, and turns out to be new Old Corona, or Old Corona being repaired after the damage done by the rocks. Several Corona citizens are pitching in, including Uncle Monty. Angry says it's time to settle down, away from the treehouse that they've been living in. Yeah, it's, Red answers, but Angry cuts her off, a total dump. Red, who's talking regularly now, yay, she's got such a cute voice.
Mm-hmm.
When she talks. I love that because it just shows this development that she has grown comfortable with herself enough to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like awesome. She's moping and she says that she likes the treehouse, but Angry is exasperated with her for going on about this again and stresses that moving to Old Corona is what's best for them. Just then, a shepherd named Earl, who we have never seen before, but Rapunzel addresses him, so clearly he is like a character, just not one we've seen before. Mm-hmm. He comes running up, crying out for help. All of his sheep have been stacked in an upside-down pyramid, precariously balanced on the one standing on the bottom. Earl says that something's gotten them scared, and that the same thing happened to his neighbor's flock. Rapunzel promises to get to the bottom of it. Red spots something growling in a bush, but before she can figure out what it is, Angry pulls her away. Acting like the blood... hound horse that he is, Max sniffs out a giant paw print, and Eugene identified it as a wolf print. But not only is it huge, Rapunzel deduces that this came from a bipedal animal, so it can't be a wolf. Rapunzel is so smart. Look at her using forensics in like two consecutive episodes.
Oh, mm-hmm. I love it.
She's a
forensic scientist.
So smart. Just then, they see someone or some thing lurking in the trees. They chase it down, and Rapunzel catches it in her hair. It looks like a person with a wolf skull head, which Rapunzel realizes is a mask. And then she lifts it to identify the person, and they growl at her, so she puts the mask back down. I love that. That was such
also,
a cute...
Also, I love all these people with their animal masks.
Yes!
Right?
It turns out that this woman is Captain Creighton, world-class big game tracker. I love her design because she's short and stocky with a chipped tooth and a scar running through her eye, but like her eye's not like damaged and closed because of it. She's mm-hmm. just got the scar on her face. It's great. She wears a chainmail hood and full armor, and she's just this little like Spitfire woman.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of awesome. They take her back to the castle to find out what she's doing there, and Creighton tells them that she's tracking a werewolf, and she has this giant book about lycanthropy. The animation when she's talking about the wolf's curse is like really freaking cool. It does mm-hmm. this neat like book illustration style, and it's like a completely different art style too. Because it's like you look at like the Having a Dream woodcuts, or you look at like the flashback for Quaid, and that's still in the series style. This is not in the series style. It's really
mm-hmm.
cool. The curse travels the world in search of host bodies and feeds on untapped rage. So it's the ideal host is someone with deep-seated anger. It inhabits Uh-oh. Their body and makes them turn into a werewolf every full moon for the rest of their life. And the wolf is now in Corona.
Wee woo.
Wee woo, wee woo. Creighton is also hunting the wolf, but Rapunzel informs her that she won't be destroying, i.e. killing, anything in her kingdom. She throws Creighton, who tells her she's making a big mistake, out of the castle. I will take that, slam! I didn't time that right. I meant to slam the door after choice, after chance. We knew what you were going for.
So cute.
And I also like that because that just goes to show like how she's no nonsense, but she's also still Rapunzel.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. So Rapunzel is determined to find the werewolf before Creighton does, because it has turned one of her subjects and she doesn't want them killed. Unfortunately, all of Corona has already heard that there is a pitchfork wielding mob at the castle door. Rapunzel assures them that there is nothing to be afraid of. While she's talking, Angry steps up and suddenly the scene goes red and Rapunzel, Eugene, and Lance all turn into werewolves. Eugene makes a bizarrely hot werewolf. Can the boy please stop for just a minute? Just kidding. Please don't stop being hot, Eugene. Like, oh my god.
I was not expecting the people to love him as a werewolf.
It reminded me kind of like It evoked the same feeling as that fan art you did, Becky.
Oh, yes. Him.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
Was he like a wolf boy or was he a kitty boy? He was a kitty boy, right. He's That's like why I liked that so much.
Boy, yeah.
Yeah. But it just, I was like, oh, it's like that fan art Becky did.
Oh, my, that was unexpected. Panicking, Angry grabs Red's hand and pulls her out into the crowd. With dozens of werewolf paws grabbing at them, Red turns into a werewolf too and says that they belong there just like Angry said. Angry backs away and then trips on the railing and goes tumbling into oblivion and then wakes up finding herself on the floor of her room in the castle having just had a nightmare. She finds out that Red's not in her own bed. Rapunzel finds Red alone on the balcony, looking glum. Red tells Rapunzel that she likes there, but that the castle and city life isn't for her. She starts saying that Angry says it's what's best for them, but she trails off. So Rapunzel asks if Angry knows she feels that way. Red says she's tried to tell Angry, but Angry doesn't want to hear it. Rapunzel tells her that she's got to find a way to get through to Angry, but in the meantime, they need to find the werewolf. And Pascal takes one of the flowers out of Rapunzel's hair and puts it in Red's, which is adorable.
Mm-hmm. So cute.
Cut to the next morning when Rapunzel is reading the lycanthropy book outside of Monty's sweet shop. She's reading that the werewolf in their human form has the mark of the wolf, which is a blue wolf paw print shaped mark somewhere on their head, arms, or face. Monty shows up and offers Rapunzel a peace offering for everything she's done for the kingdom. He extends a literal olive branch made of green licorice to her. But then Rapunzel notices a blue paw print mark on Monty's neck, so she tells him that no one likes licorice and ushers him back into the shop to get him out of Creighton's watchful gaze.
She was so, like, I felt like she was, I mean, she was pretending to be mean, but I just loved it. I was like, oh my god.
I don't like licorice. No one likes licorice. She's so cute.
She
Rapunzel
is.
Convinces Eugene and Lance to join her in investigating him, so that night, they follow him out of his shop. He spots them and takes off in his carriage and throws candy at them to trip them up as they pursue on horseback. Lance catches a sour ball. So good, but so sour. And then he and Fidella get tripped up by bubblegum. Tell my story!
He calls it. That was so good! Like, oh my
Lance,
god.
Lance. King, I love you so much.
So great.
Rapunzel and Eugene manage to stop Monty, and Monty demands to know what's wrong with her. So she tells him that she knows his secret, and he breaks down into tears, confessing that he was trying to give her stale licorice that he found in the back room. She explains that she thinks he's the werewolf because she saw the mark on his neck, and he points out that it's just paint from the construction in Old Corona earlier. She asks why he ran, and he explains that three people hopped out of the shadows and came after him. Then he points out that if he was the werewolf, he'd be transformed right now because the full moon is out. In the distance, the wolf howls and screams of panic rise up from Old Corona. Side note here, we can see the piece of wall that the rocks broke in The Secret of the Sun Drop is being repaired, and mm-hmm. I really hope they, like, put in a gate or something and not just Rapunzel is deliberately walling herself back in. Mm-hmm. That the symbology bothers me. I hope there's a gate. Yeah. Rapunzel sends Lance to help the people escape while the werewolf stalks towards her and Eugene. You know, Old Corona really should consider enforcing leash laws, Eugene, you know, comments, because
oh my god.
He's such a
doofus.
So, Creighton arrives, firing crossbow bolts at the werewolf, who runs off. Rapunzel tells him to keep Creighton busy while she goes after the wolf. Rapunzel goes running through the forest, and the wolf howls, and she realizes that she is no longer the chaser, but the chase. We are now where the episode started, with Rapunzel running through the woods and hiding behind rocks, pursued by the werewolf. And then back to, my, what big teeth you have. Cut to Eugene, who is about to do the most illegally hot thing he has ever done. Like, he runs to Creighton and blocks her crossbow with his sword and utters the now infamous line, ooh, tisk, tisk, Captain. Never bring a crossbow to a sword fight. It's just like, what the hell, Eugene?
My favorite is people who are like, I don't understand what people are saying. And then they watch it and they're like, oh, okay. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
I legitimately have multiple ace friends who are like, okay, so I'm ace, but that did something. So like,
it's actually kind of funny. It was probably because I was tired, but I didn't even notice that happened, honestly. Like, I saw him, but I just didn't hear it.
Mm-hmm.
As an ace person myself, Eugene is my exception. So anything he does, I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah. Still my exception. Congratulations.
Yeah, that is the Eugene line that has gotten all of us into a tizzy. It's amazing. I love it.
Good job. Good job, Zach.
Thanks, yep. Zach.
Good job, Zach. And also, how dare you guys keep doing this?
You know, maybe they're just giving us these lines and stuff to make up for the fact that he might never be shirtless, which will kill me, but...
I mean, it's the best outfit he's ever been in. He has never been hotter than he has in season 3.
I know. Yeah. Season 3 Eugene is a whole nother level.
He really is. He really is. It's
and
great.
we thought the deep cut was
I know,
good.
Right?
So he disarms Creighton, and she goes running off. Back with Rapunzel, the wolf is looming closer, and he smells her hair, and then Rapunzel spots the leaf necklace that Angry gave to Red and Vigor the Visionary hanging around its neck, and the werewolf is Red. For no apparent reason,
I figured that out really early.
honestly, my whole thing about, like, Little Red Riding Hood, you know, I had people, like, throwing asks and, like, DMs at me being like, you predicted that again on Tangle Talk. I'm like, yeah, well, we're good at this.
We're
you
magical know? On this the show.
The three of us have been studying Tangled for almost 9 years.
Which is why I had to mention Bastion, because if I mentioned it in Tangle Talk, maybe it'll happen.
Hey, it worked for Bird Varian. I had to hold on, but it worked.
It did. You got it worked Bird Varian.
It worked for Bird Varian.
It
worked for Dark Prince Eugene.
See, guys, this is why we have Tangled Talk, so that our predictions will come true. If we didn't have Tangled Talk, it wouldn't happen.
It also worked for that hilarious. I totally said, I was like, I think Eddie's the guy in the bear hood.
The bear hood.
Yes!
And freaking, Amber Lee was like, what? Like, how did you do that? And I'm like, I'm magical.
Yeah.
It's her clairvoyant. You're welcome.
So for no apparent reason, Red Wolf bolts off. Rapunzel goes into Angry's room at the castle to tell her the news and to ask where Red might be. So Angry leads her, Eugene, and Lance to the treehouse where they've been staying. The treehouse is ramshackle, but Red is there, human, and huddled under a blanket. She says that she's not a monster, and Rapunzel tells her that no one said she was a monster. A tear runs down Red's cheek, and when Rapunzel wipes it away, it washes off the red streak makeup under her eye and reveals the mark of the wolf, which was hiding under it. Red explains that the month before, when Angry decided that they needed to settle down, she wouldn't listen when Red said that she didn't want to go. So Red went for a walk, and that was when the wolf found her. It told her it could help her be heard, that it use all of her angry feelings and get her what she wants if she just lets it, which she did. I really like this twist on the traditional werewolf legend, because not only does it keep things clean for a kids show, it also makes the transmission of the curse a voluntary thing for the werewolf to be. Mm-hmm. It offered Red a deal, and she took the deal. There were no violent acts, and there was no force. It was just, I'm like, wow, that's actually a really cool way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because can you even imagine in the day and age we're living in, if in a kid's show they had a little girl attacked by a giant wolf?
Gosh.
Yeah. Mm-mm. There would be riots in the streets.
Yep. Rapunzel tells them that the book has a ritual that can get rid of the curse, but it has to be done on the last night of the full moon, which is that night. And I assume that this means that they see the full moon as being a 2 or 3 day thing, because, I mean, honestly, the real full moon might only be one night, but it appears a full about 3 nights in a row. Mm-hmm. And either that or that cockamamie conspiracy that Beth and I kicked up like a year ago is real, and that Corona legitimately has multiple full moons a month. I don't know.
I mean, they do have quite a lot of full moons.
and it has to be done on mystical ground, and the only mystical ground nearby is Janus Point. Do y'all remember Janus Point? It's where Subraja enchanted everybody to go to and paint the tree so that they could open up the portal to release Zontiri. In fact, when they get there, Lance says, hey, remember that art teacher who brought us out here for painting class? Whatever happened to her? And Lance reminds him, well, she turned out to be a hideous she-demon who tried to steal your very soul. Oh, right.
Good job, Eugene.
Good job, Lance. Remembering that so clearly. I mean, I gotta admit, this one little moment, I was a tiny little bit disappointed, because I've always kind of wanted Rapunzel and Lance to bond over that. Mm-hmm. And then it's just mentioned as an aside in order to remind people of where they were. I mean, because really, that's why the line was in the show, was to remind people of what Janna's point is and why we know this.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny, because, like, they remind us what Janna's point is, but they don't remind us about the other callback places we go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're like, oh, the... You know,
probably because Janna's point was like relevance, I mean, yeah, to the plot, you know?
It's a Zontiri thing, so.
It's a Zontiri thing, so it's important that we all remember where this place is.
It's very true.
I mean, and they kind of reminded you of where the Glass Zipper was because they did have the same dart-throwing thug. So, it's true. Like,
but they didn't talk about Mount Cezanne.
No, not at all.
They weren't not like, at all. Willow. It's like, no.
No.
Rapunzel begins to go through the ritual, having Red repeat after her, but Red hesitates. Everyone is encouraging her and urging her to just finish the ritual, and angry tells her she has to. Red snaps and tells everybody that she doesn't want to, that she likes being the wolf, and that she's tired of everyone telling her what to do. I'm sick of people assuming I'm okay just because I won't say I'm not, which is, you know, a very powerful.
So good.
She climbs up to the top of the altar where the tree once stood and keeps going, telling them that she doesn't like the name Red and she only went along with it because people expected her to. She wanted to be the angry one. She wants to call the shots, and being the wolf lets her do that. Angry apologizes to her for being bossy and promises that they'll figure it out together, but they need to finish this. But here comes Creighton to tell them that it doesn't matter if they finish because it's not a real ritual. She made it up so that she'd have a way of knowing where and when the wolf would be so that she could finish the job. Creighton is straight up prepared to kill a child, like straight up with a crossbow, prepared. But Red transforms into the wolf and runs off. Creighton goes after her. In the woods, Creighton is stalking Red, but Red gets the drop on her and attacks. She swipes at her with her claws and knocks her down, roaring in her face. Creighton turns into a blubbering fool, groveling and begging for her life and saying that she's a dog person and she loves dogs. Just then, the group arrives, heralded by Angry crying out, "Catalina, stop! Red's name is Catalina." Special note here that executive producer Chris Sonnenberg named her after his younger daughter. Queen Ariana is named after his older daughter. So both of his daughters have a namesake in the show, or are the namesake for a character. Angry comes out of the fog and says, "It's me, Kiara." Angry's name is Kira. So they both have names. But you know what? Angry likes her name. Angry likes being angry. But but Adelina doesn't like Red, so I don't call her Red anymore.
She's like, "This is the name that Eugene Fitz's dad gave to me, so I'll keep it."
Remember the earlier conversation about dead names? Yeah, I don't call her Red anymore.
Yeah.
She asked Catalina not to hurt Creighton, pointing out that she may be a jerk, but Catalina isn't a monster. She apologizes to her again for never listening to what Catalina had to say and promises to try harder. Rapunzel steps from the fog and validates her anger, saying that it's okay to be angry and frustrated, but that attacking people is not the way to deal with those feelings. Lance and Eugene step out of the fog, and Lance promises Catalina that they'll all help her, and Kira tells Catalina that she loves her. This calms Catalina down, and she's able to suppress her aggression. One word from Creighton, though, and Catalina is growling at her, and she runs off into the brush only to emerge covered in bunnies and screaming in terror. For some reason, I guess she's afraid of bunnies. Kind of like Rapunzel that one time.
Yep.
Catalina approaches the group on all fours, her ears down like an apologetic doggo. Kiara hugs her, and Catalina turns it into a massive group hug where she obviously squishing everybody a little too tight. The next day finds them and Ulf, for some reason, working on fixing up the treehouse so that it is habitable and a safe place for two girls to stay. It has slides and ramps and a crank-operated platform elevator. It's just, you know, kind of a really choice little treehouse. Kind of reminds me of, like, the one that Rapunzel and Cassandra built on the island.
Yeah.
Side note, Eugene takes a big bite of an apple and just sets it down a goober. He's a goober! It reminds me of, like, his one-bite apple in Fitzherbert P.I., where he takes a bite and then spends the rest of the scene gesturing with the apple, but not eating it. Lance arrives with a crate of Rapunzel's paintings from the castle, including one of him looking dashing in a hat and one of Rapunzel and Cassandra together. Everybody's happy that the girls can be close by without feeling trapped in the city, and Eugene says, "Just promise me, if you ever need anything, like help managing the rawr that you're going to ask." And he does, he's a little adorable little man. He's just so cute. Like,
he's such a dad.
He's so cute. I can't stand it. So, like, yeah, they did that. They left her as a werewolf. When she said she didn't want to be cured, they didn't condemn her. And when they found out that the cure was bunk, they didn't try to find another way. They're just, it's a great metaphor for mental illness and for how we ought to treat neurodivergency. Mm-hmm. So, like, this was a surprisingly, like, deep episode, all things considered, you know?
Yeah. They, It's one of those episodes where they're like, this is a goofy kids thing, but really it's got some real deep meaning in it. Mm-hmm. And it's just beautiful.
It's really good. Rapunzel says that the last thing they want is for Catalina to bury her anger again. And then spotting the picture of her and Cass, she lifts it up and comments, that never helped anyone. Cut to Cassandra, still trying to control the rocks. She keeps using her blue-gloved hand, i.e. the one that got burned in the great tree. There's no luck. She exhausts herself and she falls to her knees. The blue girl shows up off screen and tells her that she's doing it wrong, and Cass looks up glaring at her and says, you, with some bitterness. The blue girl tells her that she's there to teach her how to master the Moonstone's power. She tells her that it's fueled by hatred and anger and encourages her to tap into her deepest rage. She tells her to remember what Rapunzel put her through and to use that fury. Cassandra does exactly that and is able to make the rock in front of her glow blue and grow. And that's the end of the episode. So, yikes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, what have we learned, kids? We've learned that Eugene and Edmund together are great.
Yep.
That Eugene has turned the hotness up to, like, 92
mm-hmm.
out of 10.
92 out of 10, yeah.
92 out of 10.
Yep.
And that you gotta be nice to neurodivergent people. Just do it. It's not that hard. Be nice to them.
Yep.
So, wow. We still have an episode to go after this, guys. I mean, an episode of the podcast. We've got
two episodes.
Yeah, two episodes of this week's airing.
Oh my god!
So you're gonna hear from us again very, very soon.
And then we've got four more episodes to review after that. So
four more episodes to review after that. And you know what, guys? We love y'all, but when the show goes on hiatus, we're gonna take a break.
We are also gonna go on hiatus.
Yeah,
and I mean, depending upon what the schedule is, I doubt Tangle Talk is going to be on hiatus for the entire length of the show's hiatus, but we need a break.
Yeah.
So, because this is exhausting. Getting our schedule lineup is exhausting. It's exhausting.
It'll be a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at least a couple weeks, maybe a full month. We'll see. Depends upon things.
But we love you guys, and
you
can still come chat with us on Tumblr and Twitter. And
we still have three podcasts to go before that happens.
So. Yep.
Exactly.
So thank you for joining us for this one. We'll talk to you again in just a couple more days, and you'll have more to scream about, because there's a lot more to scream about.
Yes.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.